Ladies and gentlemen, Chikarmi, members of that glorious Chikara family, who is growing to such numbers that I've seen that you're not allowed to apply for memberships anymore, welcome once again to another fun-filled episode of My Breakfast with Chikara. I am joined today by a veritable man of mystery in the world of Chikara. You will know him if you have seen him. He is the one and only concierge of Chikara. If you've been to a live event, you have encountered this upbeat and glorious man. His name is Brendan O'Donnell. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us.
Top of the morning to you, PJ.
How you been?
I'm doing well. Yourself, sir?
I can't complain. It's summer, so I'm happy. It gets cold in Chicago, so I prefer this.
I've heard.
Yes. Yeah.
We were lucky when we visited last year that it was pretty seasonable. No complaints about the weather while we were up there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I know in your neck of the woods, having lived in that area myself, it gets a little cold there, too. So.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But it's boiling hot as of late down here.
Now, what is boiling hot in the estimation of Pennsylvania?
Well, that's a good question. We've reached 100.
Okay, fair
a number
enough.
Of times in the recent year, recent past. So it has not been easy on us.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. People.
But we were fortunate enough to go up to New England last weekend, and it was lovely entire time we were up there.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Yes. Yeah. Chikara just they got done making their debut in glorious Maine.
How was the show? We had an awesome time. We didn't really exactly know what we were going into.
Okay.
And we got there. The venue was awesome. It had tons of charm and character and whatnot. And
I did see a picture
almost
of the venue.
The place out.
Nice.
It was great.
Yeah, there were flags and things hung from the ceiling.
Yeah. It was curious. I walked in. I was trying to figure out what the exact purpose of these things were, and because I'm like, is there some sort of strange New England sport that I'm not familiar with? But I think they're just decoration. And we liked them a lot. The crowd was awesome the entire time. Definitely carried the show. And then Massachusetts the next day, another great show. Tons of great fans. Hit standing room only at one point.
Fantastic.
But the venue up there is next door to a police station. And one of the cops came over and was nice enough to just hang out and watch the show.
Nice.
And he was like, "Do you guys need any chairs?" So myself and a student ran over to the police station and grabbed a bunch of folding chairs and brought them back to the fans. It was awesome.
Terrific.
Great cops up there.
That's nice to hear that you guys needed additional chairs. That there weren't
Yeah.
You know, and that's a beautiful thing.
I suppose that would be my role at Chikara to make sure that everybody's comfortable and happy there. So I take it pretty seriously.
Yeah. Why don't you let people know, for those that haven't had a chance to attend the live show, of course your picture is on the roster page. You are described as an inquisitive human and your duties are there, but but give us a little bit of an insight into the day-to-day operations of your conciergeness.
Okay, well, to a certain extent, I am still sort of figuring that out. When I was approached with this, they just said, we want somebody to come out before the show, get sort of the crowd warmed up, which is traditionally pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the course of the show, I'm just around to help fans with any questions, be it what's this guy's name, what's that girl's name, where's the bathroom, and so on and so forth. I'm just there to help everybody have fun and have a great time. And as you know, at Chikara, we have a lot of first-time Chikara fans because we're a growing company. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of first-time wrestling show attendees, and a lot of them don't know what to expect, and they have certain preconceived notions about what wrestling is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of nice to have a gentleman like such as myself there to just make sure that everybody is happy and they are informed. And nothing is too confusing, because any Chikara fan knows that things can get a little confusing from time to time in our organization. So that's sort of the role that I fill. But the challenging part is occasionally I will be asked questions that I have no idea the answer to. In particular, when the Swarm and Gakito first showed up, they're like, "Hey, Brendan, you're the guy we ask questions to." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And he's like, "Well, what's the deal with this?" And I'm like, "If I knew the answer, I'd be happy to provide it to you, but I have no idea what's going on."
They are a bit of a confusing. Chaotic. Yeah, they're a bit of a confusing bunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
You don't like see them around either. They just sort of like appear. It's very disconcerting.
They must have excellent hearing. They just hear themselves being announced and their music being played, and they're like, "Oh, gotta get there." So, as this sort of master of ceremonies, do you see yourself more as like a circus ringmaster, or are you more of, say, a Willy Wonka in this beautiful Technicolor world of Jakara?
Well, if I'm given those two choices, I guess I'm going to say a Willy Wonka. A ringmaster sort of implies to me that I have some sort of control of what's going on, which I have absolutely none. But, yeah, I don't. I do my best not to get involved and just be sort of the liaison between the fans and the show, and just show them this is awesome.
All right.
I love this. Hopefully you'll love it too. And I'd say 9.9 times out of 10 they do.
Perfect. Perfect. Was there an ad on Craigslist that you responded to in order to get this job, or is it the Jakara family?
I would not say that.
Okay.
I met Bryce Remsburg through of all people, my ex-wife, one of the best things she did for me. And Bryce, I was a lifelong wrestling fan, but like many of our fans at Chikara, I had lost my smile, so to speak, for the business. And for years I went without TV, and I didn't keep up with anything, and I wasn't knowledgeable of the indie scene. One of my big regrets is not to plug another company, but I'm told that I lived very, very close to PWG when I was out living in California, and I had no knowledge of it whatsoever. So I came back to Pennsylvania, and Bryce was setting up a surprise party for a mutual friend of ours, and my ex-wife was like, Are you a professional wrestling referee? And Bryce was like, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I am." And then we, you know, we're looking around his Facebook and whatnot, and we saw that he also did sketch comedy. And for years, that's how I made my living, not specifically sketch comedy, but I was a performer and actor for many years, and I studied improv and sketch comedy when I was in California. And my ex-wife was just like, "Wow, my husband's really into sketch comedy as well." So we met in the party, and friendships were formed, as that happens. And I just started showing up to car shows, felt absolutely at home. I was sort of burnt out, walked away from wrestling fandom when it just got ultra-violent and just not something that I wanted to sit down and look at.
Okay.
And when I walked into my first car show, I was like, a Madonna song, "It Felt Like Home." And I started going to more shows, and I was fortunate enough to help Chikara out in some other avenues. And then the idea came up for this concierge, or just general nice guy to be around, to be a point person for the fans. And Bryce brought it up to me. I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a try." And my first night, I was sort of had an ill-conceived notion of what this was supposed to be.
Okay.
And I was doing terrible stand-up comedy to people in Williamsport, making puns about Sugar Dunkerton and why do people cheer for sugar. I mean, I've cheered for high fructose corn syrup, just terrible stuff.
Oh my.
And it went horribly. And then the next night I was in the former ECW arena, which was terribly intimidating. And that's something I didn't really prepare myself for either. I mean, I was probably spent, I'd say, realistically, I started acting when I was a kid, 20 years on stage, and I was never, ever more nervous than when I was walking out at the ECW arena.
Wow. It's high praise for that.
But I got through it.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, I do know the feeling. My very first year in wrestling was capped off by working King of Trios. And
oh wow,
was it? Oh wait, was it? Oh, no, it was still Tag World Grand Prix at that point.
Oh wow, okay, okay.
And it hit me on the third night when we were at the arena, and I was standing there, you know, opening match, and I'm just thinking to myself, I'm in this place where I came to watch wrestling. I'm not supposed to be here. I'm doing some sort of disservice by standing around here. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that. Wow.
I was I was preparing for the Philly crowd, but just like immediate booze when I walked out. I'm like, oh, I have to win these people over. And the late great Frank Talent was there and was sort of shouting at me while I was trying to get through my spiel at the beginning.
Was he worried awesome. About you spitting? Was that Frank?
Was
Frank
he worried about me? What? I'm sorry.
Spitting. Frank gets very concerned if people spit.
Yes, I have heard him go on tirades about that, but he was concerned. It was a very rainy day,
uh-huh.
and he wanted to get the people in the building, and somehow me speaking on the microphone was not allowing that to him. So we got through it and got everybody in.
Brilliant.
And but yeah, I mean, Philly is a tough crowd, as we all know, but
Absolutely.
Everybody... once I get beyond crowd level and I'm standing there talking to people one-on-one and answering questions and whatnot, mm-hmm. everybody's more than kind, very brotherly as we all know.
Perfect. Yeah, they are terrible that way. Terrible and wonderful all at the same time.
It's a terrible wonderfulness.
Yes. I believe I was, after that same King of Trios somewhere online, I was described as a Sabato Gigante.
Nice.
Yeah, so they didn't enjoy me at the time and probably still don't, and I fully understand and I expect things to be thrown at me someday.
But it's not that I was ever the Philly style fan that would throw things at people or boo people, but it's sort of, you know, it's a badge of courage. Like, I stood there and I took it, and I remember when they started booing me, I just let it happen, just soaked it in.
Okay.
But
nice.
Times have changed, thankfully.
Absolutely.
And I think people are starting to understand what I'm there for and that I'm not there simply to delay the show.
I don't think anyone ever actively is there to do that. But, I could easily see the reactions that way. Now, you've touched on another side of things where I mm-hmm. I also have some knowledge living here in Chicago. I initially moved here to Chicago to pursue improv as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, studying at the Second City and improv
cool.
Olympic and things like that. So I'm mm-hmm. curious about your theatrical history.
Okay.
So you started when you were a kid, you said?
Yeah, I was a kid. I used to trick my parents into letting me stay up late by doing Saturday Night Live sketches from my older sisters, which is, in hindsight, terribly inappropriate. How I would even know about those things at age 8 is beyond me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as things go, everybody's like, oh, you should start acting. I did my first show when I was 8 at Lancaster's own Fulton Opera House, which is the America's longest-running opera house.
I know
and
the
it was a beautiful
opera
place. I'm sorry?
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I know of the Fulton Opera House. Yes, I've heard many advertisements for it. So I went to college at Carlisle. So,
Okay.
Yeah, so I cool. know the South Central Pennsylvania area quite well.
Nice. Oh, it's lovely. One of my favorite things to brag to people about is I was on the same stage that John Wilkes Booth was on. Because he performed there as an actor.
Really?
Before he became a murderer.
Yeah. Hey, we got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and so I did shows when I was a kid. My parents were very protective of being stage parents or mm-hmm. thrusting me into things that were inappropriate for children and giving me pretty sheltered. Kept doing it throughout high school and whatnot, and went to performing arts school in New York City. No big deal. And it was like... just a straight-up performing arts school, just like singing, dancing, acting, and people would always ask me, is it like Fame? Like, trying to mess with me, I'd be like, yes, it's exactly like Fame. They're like, oh, what? People just start spontaneously singing and dancing in big musical numbers? And I'm like, yes, they absolutely do, every single day. On the street, it was...
I'm inclined to agree.
It was not... I'm sorry?
I'm inclined to agree. I just assume that's what happens as well, because even just being in a minor theater department, there was random breakouts of song. So but
when Glee, that show, hit big, I was not surprised at all.
I hate that show.
That was very much my experience. I cannot watch that show.
Good. I despise
incidentally.
It. Incidentally. Yeah, I despise it.
Oh, my goodness. It's far too much for me.
Yeah.
So where are we? So I finished school up there, came back to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where I'm born and raised, and performed at a theater called Sight and Sound Theaters. Have you ever heard of that, PJ?
Sight and Sound. The only I remember, I believe it was in the Lancaster area. I went to, because I had a job where I was attempting to find work for individuals who were coming off of workers' comp, and there was a job advertised at a theater. It was a massive theater that was all religious-based.
Bingo. That is Sight and Sound.
Nice.
That is Sight and Sound. It was a heavily born-again Christian theater.
Yes.
Which it's not the antithesis of what I'm about, but it was a little curious for myself to be there, and I spent 4 years there.
Wow.
Because anybody who's in the business knows if you have a good gig that's going to feed you and keep you alive for 4 years, you ride it out.
Definitely.
So having the voice that I do, that all the great Chikar fans are hearing right now, sort of exemplified, I was cast as Satan for 4 years. I had to shave my head and fly around on wires and ride horses, and it was a groovy adventure, to say the least. It's a weird experience.
Did things ever change while you were there? I mean, Satan's pretty cut and dry, but in terms of the environments in which you played Satan, did that change much, or was there kind of a set schedule for the 4 years?
There was a, we would do, it was a 2,000 seat arena, basically, for Christian theater. And we would do three different productions throughout the course of the year. We'd do like an Easter show, and then Noah was our big draw there for a while.
Okay.
Which we transformed as like a wraparound theater, and there were like 200 animals, and I used to have to basically wrestle donkeys and camels all the time to get them on stage. And then we would do the Christmas show at the end of the year, and you know, they'd do the auditions for this cast of like 60, and I was, at one point I was well established, and I'd be like, maybe I'll try to be Jesus this time, but no, it wasn't happening.
You were typecast at that point.
They fell right through me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Jesus was not a baritone, apparently. But I did that for a couple of years.
Wow.
It was strange, and but no regrets. I mean, that kept me alive for 4 years.
Exactly. Any potentially dangerous encounters with any of the animals during the Noah production?
I got thrown from a horse, not on stage, thankfully, because I don't have quite that amount of poise to pull that off.
Okay.
But, I got thrown from a horse, and that was, it's not fun
at
all.
I can't imagine it would be.
And the old adage, you got to get back on the, wait, what is it? Get right back on the horse that threw you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't subscribe to that. So I took some time off, and I tried to force them to get me a different horse. I was playing I actually wasn't playing Satan the whole time. I was playing this different strange evil, like, pirate Jafar from Aladdin type character. And I had a macaw, like a parrot, that I had to carry around with me. And anybody that knows me knows that I hate birds, like, can't stand them. I'm pretty much just like a mammal fan exclusively.
Okay.
So like the horses and I got along fine. But me and this bird had a tumultuous relationship, and his name was Joker, and he would, like, go and pretend that he was going to bite my finger, and I'd, like, mutter at him, like, when you die, I'm going to eat you, and just try to intimidate him into behaving. And it was shocking that I could really have such a bad relationship with an animal, but I would go to speak my lines while holding him, and he'd scream in the microphone. It was horrible.
Oh.
And he has since passed away. God rest his soul. And I did not eat him.
Well, that's good. That's good.
But Let me think. The most dangerous situation I was ever in is I had to fly while I was there, like on wires flying through the sky. And at one point, Jesus was flying through the air and had a flaming sword and shot me as I was Satan. And I literally caught on fire 30 feet in the air.
What?
And... they had to bring me down quickly, but that was a harrowing experience.
And
I'm not
sorry. Go ahead.
I'm not particularly fond of heights, so that was not that much fun either.
Well,
it was strange. When I was up on stage on the catwalk, standing there, I was terrified. But once I was hanging, I was fine, which I found very confusing. It's like I don't trust myself. Like I feel like for no reason I'm going to jump off a 50-foot scaffolding.
Right. So you'd be fine actually falling out of the plane. It's just the actual getting out of the plane part that's hard.
Precisely.
All right.
Yes.
Fair enough.
And then I'll jump forward ahead a little bit. While I was in California, I got a call from my agent out there. And for some of the people who have come to see the show, they see that I have a Disney tattoo. I'm a big Disney Parks fan.
Nice.
So I loved it. And they would, every once in a while as an actor out there, you get offered jobs at Disney to be in the shows or dance or whatever. Mm-hmm. But my favorite was my agent called me and they said, Brendan, they want you to play Tinkerbell. And I was like, what? And then it was explained to me that... because of my years of flying experience on wires, I had qualified to fly over actual human beings. And they always use a man to play. I'm not, I just realized that I'm probably tearing down the veil here for somebody who doesn't
want
it torn
down. I am a little distraught. There is a tear rolling down my cheek.
I was too. So imagine my horror. Wow. They use a man to play Tinkerbell. Because he's more visible from the ground. This is like when Tinkerbell flies out at the end of the fireworks and does her little gimmick. Mm-hmm. So, needless to say, I turned that down as well. But, finished it. But, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, well, yeah, because, I mean, once again, you could catch on fire.
I didn't think that far ahead.
Yeah, and now, that's amazing to me. But, again, it speaks to... the level to which the Disney Corporation does things to make sure that everything goes just right. I would never think to myself that you would need to have a man play Tinkerbell because they're more visible. Like, that's brilliant. Wow.
Yeah, it really is.
Huh.
You got to get the biggest person to play the smallest fairy. She's a fairy. Yeah, she's a fairy.
She is a fairy, yes. Yes. Wow.
But I turned that down. And yeah, that was a big Wizard of Oz thing for me. Like, I did not want to know what happened there.
Yeah.
And I still don't. And I fear that I may have ruined it for somebody else, which makes me a horrible person.
We'll put a disclaimer at the beginning,
beginning
of the show.
Spoiler alert about Disney Parks would be the most confusing thing in front of a Jakar podcast ever.
Exactly. It'll be like that lawsuit that was brought up when there was an individual because their child had looked backstage at Disney and saw that some of the characters had the heads off of the costumes. So they sued Disney because it...
Rightfully so.
Yeah, their child was distraught at seeing that Mickey Mouse was not real.
You got to put up more curtains.
You do.
That's the only solution.
I've done like the backstage tour at Disney, like down at Disney World. It's astounding. The number of
I've heard nothing but.
Yeah, there's like underground tunnels all over the place, so that people can get around. It's terrifying. that's where to go during some sort of nuclear holocaust.
It's all part of Walt's master plan.
More than likely, yes. He's expecting the nuclear thing to unfreeze him, and then he will be back. He'll come back to life. So,
I had my 10-year-old nephew pull me aside the other day and very seriously looked me in the eye, and he's like, "Uncle Brendan, is Walt Disney's head frozen?" And I'm like, "I don't believe so, buddy." And I couldn't tell if he was disappointed or, like, happy to not have to think about that.
Sure.
But that happened.
Scary scary that you could have said to him, no, it's not. But Ted Williams' head is.
That's exactly what I said.
Did you really?
Hey. And he's like, who's Ted Williams? So, yeah, forget about it, kid. Scram.
You beat a kid, you bottom me. Fantastic. Wow. All right.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. No, I got sidetracked, as I often do.
Not a problem.
Moved out to California after my time at Sight and Sound. And studied at the Groundlings Theater.
You did? Okay. I was curious. Yeah. How was
and,
that?
I had a great time there. Oh, it was wonderful.
For those that don't know, the Groundlings is, I would suppose, the equivalent, if you have heard of Second City in Chicago. It's sort of the Los Angeles equivalent of probably one of the greatest training centers for individuals that end up in comedy, in, you know, on Saturday Night Live, in film, TV, everything like that. Notable alumni there were Lisa Kudrow, Phil Hartman, Andy Dick, I believe. I'm trying to think who else.
Yeah, I always like to tell people I finished half of my training there. I didn't make it the whole way through just due to living circumstances. I had to move back west.
Gotcha.
So I made it halfway through. So I tell people that legally speaking, I'm 50% as funny as Will Ferrell.
That's, hey, you know what? That's 100% more than most. So that's perfect. I'm getting a little irritated though at the I'm getting a little irritated though at the amount in which you're mimicking me, because I made it halfway through the conservatory at Second City. So I'm getting a little frightened at this point that we're in some sort of parallel universe thing.
I'm sure there's some strange Chikara angle that'll emerge someday about us being the same person or in different time periods or something.
Possibly.
But when I was out at the Groundlings, I have a very strict policy in real life to not mark out about anybody, so to speak. And when I was there, Chris Jericho was studying at the same time, and I would see him routinely. And I'm like, I can't bother him. You know, I mean, he's one of the all-time greats. And I would see him maybe twice a month, and I never, ever bothered him and said, hey, you're great at what you do. Maybe the best. Maybe the best, but I didn't say that.
Okay.
But yeah, I was out there for a couple of years, as most actors are, just dirt poor, living off 68 cents a day.
Wow.
And as such, I didn't have, let's say, car insurance or car inspected. Got my car impounded, and I was like, all right, that's my cue. I'm happily retiring from show business.
All right.
And yeah, that was the last time I acted, so to speak.
Is there anything that people might have seen you in? Because I freely admit, as you mentioned this, I immediately ran to IMDb to see if I could.
Oh, goodness. No.
There are two Brendan O'Donnells there. Okay.
Yeah. There's also a Brendan O'Donnell who is is considered the Irish Charles Manson. I'm not him either.
Okay.
Now, I moved out there with the idea, I'm getting ready to wrap up my acting career. It was never really, my passion, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
And people look at me like I'm crazy. Because without sounding too braggadocious, I was okay at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to people, I'm sure that there's professional football players who don't love football.
Probably.
Do you agree? Do you think this is a possibility?
Absolutely, it's a possibility. And especially with some of the individuals in the NFL, I mean, depending, even on a lower level, they can have a decent amount of money thrown at them. And it's reasonable
exactly,
to say, well,
yeah,
I can do that for a while and get paid that amount of money.
Right.
Although, so, as you just explained, you weren't necessarily getting paid that amount of money either.
No. Yeah, Costco hot dogs kept me alive for a long time.
Hey.
I keep talking about things that kept me alive, like death is imminent for me in any moment, which thankfully isn't the case. Where
but
was
you had
I?
An agent.
No,
but
I didn't. I moved out there with the express purpose of stopping, refraining from doing live theater, as I had done it for many years, and musicals and whatnot. And when I went out there, that's the only work I could get. And I did a couple of plays out there that paid the bills. I did one commercial that I ended up never actually seeing for some catfish fast food chain in the Midwest. I don't know what it is. But I showed up. I was there for all of 5 minutes, and I left. And then this is perhaps the dumbest thing I was ever involved in. I was in a Schick Quattro infomercial that was just for the internet.
What?
Do you see the inherent problem here?
I do. No one would ever sit on and watch. No.
Exactly.
I'm supposed to watch that when I'm
funny.
Yeah, I'm supposed to watch that when I'm feeling bad for myself and eating like Cheetos and ice cream at 2 a.m.
Exactly.
Wow.
So the notion that anybody would sit down and like, you know what, I'm in the mood for an infomercial on razors was fascinating to me. But as anybody in the business knows, you don't turn anything down, and I got paid a ridiculous amount of money for a silly amount of work for an infomercial that I never saw. So I never saw myself on the silver screen, so to speak. But no, I did some plays. Some of the stuff I was happy with what I could contribute, and I met some cool people. I did my favorite story of me being an idiot out there is we did this staged reading of Casablanca for some actor's charity, and lots of stars were in it, like Christian Slater and Thor Birch and all this stuff. I had all of one line, as you would imagine. But as it turns out, Angela Lansbury, of all people, came to see the show.
Nice.
And the whole cast is standing there in like a receiving line, like we're meeting the Queen of England. Everybody's like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. You're such an inspiration, all this stuff. And I was standing next to my aunt, who is an actress, who gets lots of work. And if you see me in one of the Chikara shows, I'll point out to you some of the stuff she was in. She was just on Big Bang Theory. She has a recurring role on that as somebody's mom.
No way.
And, you know, yeah, she's, what's the, I don't watch the show, unfortunately.
I believe
one
she,
of those.
I would
too
assume,
cool for TV, guys.
Yeah, I would assume she plays the mother of Leonard.
No. She's not. I think she's maybe done one or two episodes. I think she is Maya Bialik's mother on that show.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, she has a much better constitution than I do for the business, and she's been doing it for 30 years and has carved out a nice little life for herself. But I'm saying she looked over me while I was out there, which is probably the reason for the only tiny bit of success I had while I was out there. She was standing next to me, and I had a reputation for doing dumb things sometimes when I felt uncomfortable. So I shook Angela Lansbury's hand, and I said to her, and I quote, "Yo, you were the bomb in Bedknobs and Broomsticks."
No.
Completely, like, that was what I thought I should say to this. She's got to be a dame of some sort, right? This wonderful older British lady. Yo, you were the bomb in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
I can't even look at your picture on the website right now. I have that uncomfortable feeling like watching Ricky Gervais on The Office.
I can't. It's surprising that I say so many stupid things to people, because the shows like The Office and Curb Your Enthusiasm are too cringy for me. I get too physically uncomfortable watching them.
I do as well.
Probably because they remind me of my real life.
Wow. What was her response?
But to her credit, Angela Lansbury just sort of chuckled and sort of patted me on the cheek, like the wonderful woman that she is.
I have no idea what you just said. I heard Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and that was it.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
But, I mean...
Okay.
I didn't have too many celebrity encounters where I did too many dumb things. I was extremely rude to Natasha Henstridge once because I was overwhelmed by her beauty. And she asked me for a simple favor, and I, like, snapped at her because I'm an idiot.
How did you snap at her?
I was working, to make ends meet, I was working at, of all places, Gap Kids Baby Gap.
Awesome.
And she asked me, she's like, there was a mannequin, she's like, I need a medium of this shirt. Can you see if that shirt on the medium, on the mannequin is a medium? Like, super sweet, couldn't have been nicer. But me overreacting to her beauty, being like, oh, I don't want to mark out and be like, you know, go gaga over her. She's like, can you give me that shirt? And I was like, I guess. And I felt absolutely horrible and such an idiot. So that kind of poise is what made them comfortable putting me in front of the Philadelphia crowds that like to boo and tear me apart.
Knowing the family friendly atmosphere of Chikara, this could have turned into a very unfortunate incident. It's the wrong person that said something.
Kids get free passes. I'm enormously sensitive to that.
Okay, that's good.
The kids are the best because, you know, they look at me like I'm supposed to be something more than I am while their parents are asking me questions. It's awesome. But nice. It's so sweet, and they're just so excited to be there. And this weekend, one kid was hitting me up with all these questions about, like, well, what's the ring made of and what kind of tape goes around the ropes? And I'm like, you're not going to try to make your own ring, are you, bud? And he promised that he wasn't.
That's good. That's good. We can't be contributing to the moral decay of America. So,
nah.
Wow. Wow. And so...
Yeah, I was very happy to be involved in an organization where I wouldn't be embarrassed if, one of my nephews or nieces or a child was there in
definitely.
The audience. It's one of the great points of pride with my involvement with Chikara.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, you can literally send anybody there and have no worries that someone will be appalled by, well, just about anything with the way most wrestling companies are this day. So now you said you sort of missed wrestling quite a bit. What sort of period did you miss? Miss like the entire Monday Night Wars or?
No. I was around for that. Let me think. I remember the moment where I sort of walked away from wrestling, and I was watching a WrestleMania in a bar in called Rookies in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I was eating just like sopping wet hot wings, well, barbecue wings, and it was a WrestleMania. I think it was. Fans can tear me apart if I'm wrong about this, and it never actually happened at WrestleMania. I feel like it was Triple H. And Stone Cold, but I can't remember that ever actually happening.
I don't believe it was Triple H. Okay.
I never said I was the most knowledgeable man about mainstream wrestling. But it was a gory scene, I'll put it that way lightly, and I was sitting there eating these wings, and I'm like, this is not good for me. This is not healthy. I don't feel good about myself. Here's a man who, you know, to some level, I respect his work and I wish him no ill. And I'm sitting here, sitting down, eating hot wings, watching a man be not well.
Yes.
And that was it for me.
Okay. All right.
That's... So I walked away for a while.
Okay. All right. Wow.
But
and so it was
Chikara is not that.
No.
Which made me very happy.
Absolutely.
Because I got into it. I'm guessing, I don't know you that well, PJ, but I'm guessing we're about the same age. So we probably got into it around the same era, like Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect era.
Absolutely.
Am I correct?
You are 100% correct.
That's what grabbed me, the sort of absurdity of it all. Mm-hmm. And when I happened upon Chikara, I was like, yes, this is what I loved when I was a little man and what I love as a big man, a medium-sized man.
Who was your favorite when you were younger and watching?
Well, when I was a kid, my first introduction was a Rick Rude match, and I just loved it. And, obviously I had no idea what he was referring to. But he was just the best, and he was such a spectacle to behold. But then during, like, the introduction of the Undertaker years, that was it for me. Mm-hmm. And, people poo-poo me sometimes, but the Undertaker is the all-time greatest as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with me having bright red hair that's about 2 feet long.
And all those amazing skull tattoos all over you.
I don't actually have any skulls.
No.
He's definitely not the reason that I ride a motorcycle or anything like that.
With a giant title belt
around
your neck.
Yeah, him. I've been known to. I have a title belt right behind me.
Title belt, helmet, whatever you want. It's fine.
Yeah. So Undertaker, and when WCW I was available to watch, the Great Muta was the guy for me.
Yeah, Muta... Always. The first time I saw him, he blew my mind.
Oh my gosh!
Just
unbelievable.
Yeah, I knew I had seen something different and amazing when mm-hmm. I saw him for the first time, and it was he just happened to be on a random tape that I rented from the video store.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think it was a Starrcade called Future Shock, and they were doing this round robin tournament with like Sting. Mm-hmm. I think it was Sting, Ric Flair, Lex Luger, and Muda. And
I'm pretty sure I saw it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and the first time Muda broke out his that handspring elbow to the corner, I was like, what is this man? He is amazing. Why isn't he the champion?
It was just something about like the physically impressive and the guys who had the it factor and combined it with sort of the macabre mm-hmm. just really grabbed me as a young man. I was always into Scooby-Doo and the Munsters and like sort of the gothic side of things. Not that I was ever goth, but then when I came in and I saw Ultramantis Black for the first time, I was like, yes, here we go again.
There are none darker than Ultramantis Black.
No, this absolutely not. So wow. Devious.
Wow. So you've had, you've definitely had a whirlwind trip,
just
around the
fun.
Country, but in your life in general.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's fun times.
Do you ever have
strange
any desire?
Ways?
Yeah. Do you ever have any desire to act again at all? Just even for fun or anything?
I do not. One of the great things about Chikara, due to my workload, I can't go on every trip. But one of the draws of acting to me was it subsided my wanderlust. And we get to run around the country, and I get to be involved in this theatrical thing that the pressure of actually wrestling would be a lot for me. Mm-hmm. But I get to support something that I love, and it's just... some people talk about jazz. I call wrestling the greatest American art form.
Thank you for saying that, honestly, because my girlfriend's tired of ever hearing it, and everybody I know is tired of hearing it, but professional wrestling, it's, you know, you can say what you will about it, but it is one of the three, I believe, uniquely created American art forms that has
Absolutely.
Taken over the entire world. And you have to respect something about that. So thank you for saying that. I'm glad I'm not the only lunatic spouting that all over the place.
He's taking this a bit too seriously, as we all do.
Exactly.
Okay. As far as I've been, it's not like Steven Spielberg is calling me or anything, but I've been asked to return to the stage on occasion, and it's just it's not a desire of mine.
Okay. All right. Did you
happily retired, as I say.
Nice. As I think we all do when we're fans. Maybe you didn't, but did you ever have a desire to be a wrestler at any time in your life?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, I think if we're all honest with ourselves, anybody who's involved in wrestling, and I'm assuming you'll agree with this, dreamed about being a professional wrestler.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't until, for those of you who may not know, notice the white in my beard. I'm 33 years old. And it was about last year that, like, it cost money to go to school that I was finally like, you know what? Maybe I'm not actually going to be WWE Intercontinental Champion. It just occurred to me then. But, I mean, I'm definitely want to, if for no other reason, just to feel what it feels like, do a little training.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough we did an open call before my, I guess, official involvement with Chikara. Mm-hmm. That we got to get in the ring and roll around and not take bumps, so to speak, but just get in there. And it was so, so delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people were like... sort of complaining about it. I'm like, what are you talking? You've sat on your couch for years. We all have, and watched mm-hmm. professional wrestling. And you have this golden opportunity to get in here and actually try it in a real ring. Just live it up. Have a great time.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to get in the ring a couple more times,
okay.
just for fun. I fear that the actual as a great worker, I fear that ship has sailed.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. There's a time, and I mean, you know, I echo your sentiments when I first came in. I became a referee because while, yes, you know, I desperately wanted to be a professional wrestler, I was fully aware of my own personal physical limitations. I was not an athlete, a sports guy. So I was, you know, it seemed like a role to fit. But at the same time, yeah, that first time you step into a ring, there is a magic to that.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing. And I still feel that. Which I'm glad to say whenever I do work. Yeah, there's nothing else I want to be doing.
Yeah, even when I step up on the apron to let people in the ring, which is awesome that we're a company that does something like that for the pictures at intermission, it's thrilling to me still. And I'm, you know, a 33-year-old failed actor, jaded man. And I get thrilled when I step into this indie wrestling ring.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Simple choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know what? 45 minutes has flown by.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yes, I know. And so, unfortunately, at this time, I think we will have to say our goodbyes.
Sing that song from Dirty Dancing to each other.
Yes. Yes.
All right, I think we've worn out our welcome.
More than likely. But hey, I was told when I was doing theater in college by the dance teacher that I had great feet, so I might be able to do the jump. But do you think you could do the lift? I'm a little heavy, so I'll throw that out there. We'll find a link.
Get like the old school round the ring mats to try it out on.
There we go. All right, perfect. Perfect. But as we end every Breakfast with Chikara, is there a way people might be able to contact you and interact with you electronically, and all of that fun stuff? Or is that not your realm? I don't
know. Leader of Chikara once asked me if I would be like the online liaison. I was like, I've never been on a chat board. Okay. I don't have the internet in my house. I'm more of a face-to-face guy. Some people say that I look kind of intimidating till you talk to me. So let's just chat. Come to one of the shows. You'll have a great time. And I'll answer any questions and make sure that you're having a big old time.
Absolutely. And, of course, upcoming live events. For those of you in the area of Reading, Pennsylvania, you guys are going to be doing a show at the First Energy Stadium along with the
awesome.
Reading Phillies. I assume after the baseball game ends?
I don't know if there's actually a baseball game that night.
Okay.
I'm not 100% on that. I think they may be out of town. But, you know, being from around here, I grew up going, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, why not?
And it's a charity event for the Baseball Town Charities, I believe, which is great. It's awesome to be involved in a indie wrestling league that takes that sort of stuff seriously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Nice. And then the next set of events, Chikara is making their return to the Midwest. I don't know if you are making the travel with them.
I unfortunately am not. My real life, so to speak, is getting in the way.
Understandable. Hey, we gotta do what we gotta do. So then, individuals,
I will be in other parts unknown. Unfortunately,
perfect.
Otherwise, I'd be on the road with everybody.
Wow, you found the way to get there. I'm still looking.
Yep.
Lucky you. All right. Well,
I found
then,
it on Kayak, not Expedia or Orbitz.
I usually use MapQuest, and it just sends me in the wrong direction all the time. Yeah. Well, then, to speak with Brendan in person, you will have to, poor you, attend the King of Trios 2012, Friday, September 14th.
King of Trios is going to be awesome.
Yes. And, all in Reading, Pennsylvania. And from the lineup that has been announced, the entrance so far, that's going to be, well, just a ridiculous weekend in general. So everybody, the Faces of Pain are going to be the Warlord, the Barbarian, Meng is going
beautiful.
To be there. Osaka Pro is sending a team. The Sendai Girls are sending a team. Team JWP.
Oh, they are great.
I'm irritated right now because I want to be there. So to see one Brendan O'Donnell in action, you must attend one of these events live. Unfortunately, he is not an Easter egg on the DVDs.
maybe one day. Pause and Zoom.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, Brendan, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure, PJ.
All right.
It was very nice to talk to you for more than 15 seconds just saying hello.
Absolutely. I know. This is, yes, literally the very first time we've actually had to talk at any given time. So and now, as everybody else knows, I know more about you than I ever imagined I would. And that's a beautiful thing. So,
well, we'll do yours next year sometime. I'll learn more about you.
Perfect. It's a date.
How
awkward. What an awkward way to end. All right.
We agree. Thank you once again.
Fans, I'm going to run away right now because I'm just embarrassed.